So the album is called American Rapture. It's from Azika Records. And it has three different composers on here, two different world premiere recordings. And I really want to focus in on the harp concerto, first of all, if you don't mind. Music of Jennifer Higdon. Yolanda, can you just give us a little bit of the backstory of how this piece came to be?
Well, I first heard Jennifer's music about 15 years ago, as I was actually standing backstage waiting to walk on and play the Ginastera Harp Concerto. And I remember kind of stopping in my tracks and thinking to myself, wow, this compositional voice would be amazing on the harp. And that kind of planted the seed, for me at least, to begin pursuing Jennifer. And I would say from first conversation to fruition, this project took about 10 years. And with a composer like Jennifer, you know, the queue is long. And, you know, it also takes time to assemble an orchestral consortium for funding and performances. And whenever you do something like this, you don't want it to be like a one and done thing. Whenever I learn and get behind a new piece of music, it's really important to me to not only assure multiple performances of it, but whenever possible, a recording as well, because that really goes a long way to assuring the long-term life of a work. Because, you know, when we trudged into this territory. Happily trudged. It's like being an explorer. It's like being a pioneer. You go in having absolutely no idea what this piece of music is going to sound like. And unless there's a recording, so too shall everyone who comes after you. And I think that, you know, orchestras are always short on time. Conductors are fantastically busy. The more you can do to make it easy to conceptualize before something is programmed, the better it is for everyone. So it was kind of a multifaceted project, and I just couldn't be more thrilled that all the elements came together, and Jennifer was a pleasure, and of course the Rochester Phil and Ward, I can't think of a better lead orchestra for a project like this.
Ward, can you tell us how your orchestra came to be involved in the project?
Well, it was Yolanda, really. She and I have known each other for, I think, at least 10 years at this point. We've been good friends for all that time. But we haven't really, well, we met working together at a small music festival, but, you know, we haven't really had a big project until now. And so Yolanda called me one day kind of out of the blue and said, hey, I'm you know, working on this consortium, putting this together. Jennifer Higdon's writing me a piece. And of course, immediately I was very interested because I've been a big fan of Jennifer's music for many, many years. I've done a lot of her pieces. And, you know, I love Yolanda's artistry. And personally, we've always gotten along really well. So I knew that would be a good fit. And so, you know, I jumped at the opportunity. And then once, you know, I agreed to be part of it, then the conversation started about who would get the world premiere and, you know, whether there would be a recording. And the whole thing kind of evolved really naturally.
Yeah.
And then we were able to fill the album out with two other great pieces, feature another world premiere recording. And, you know, when I take a step back now that we're finished and we've got the finished product literally right in front of us on the table here, I feel very proud and very satisfied with how it all turned out.
Well, let me just say it's a beautiful recording, beautifully recorded, and the music itself is just a delight to listen to. You've got two world premiere recordings, but you also have the Barber piece, which is not that well known, shall we say, not that often performed. So where would you say that Barber fits in with these other two composers, Jennifer Higdon and Patrick Harlan? And why did you choose that to go on this recording?
Well, Barber is kind of the elder statesman. You know, we wanted to look at different generations of American musical sound and different voices, you know, throughout the evolution of American composition. Mm-hmm. And of course, Samuel Barber is in that pantheon and that first kind of golden era with Copland and Bernstein, and you know, that came from that older tradition, but was also very innovative. But at the same time, he, I don't think, got as much credit as he deserved in his lifetime for his music, because he didn't go so far as to write, you know, serialist music. He wasn't, you know, really edgy like a lot of other people were in the middle part of last century. He was a little bit more old school, and I think the criticism was unfair. And now that we're far enough away from that, his music is really coming back, I think, yeah. And it's proving that it does deserve to have its rightful place up there in the pantheon, as I said. And I've always loved Samuel Barber. I think his musical language has a wonderful blend of lyricism and craftsmanship, form, structure, but also power and drama. I like to say that this piece, his first symphony through composed, gives you all the drama and power of a Mahler symphony in just over 20 minutes. And it's a tour de force for the orchestra as well. It's a piece that I personally love. I've conducted it all over the place. I think it really shows off the orchestra in a tremendously dynamic, diverse, virtuosic way. And so I thought it would be a great opportunity, since it's the first recording that I've made with my orchestra in Rochester, for us to sort of strut our stuff. And sonically, and in terms of the musical language itself, I think it really goes together very well with both Higdon and Harlan.
Yeah. Well, I think Higdon, to a certain extent, falls into sort of like the category of being an heir somewhat. Mm-hmm.
Well, there is that mm-hmm. Curtis connection,
right,
too,
right.
Which is cool.
Yeah. Yeah, interesting. Yolanda, I'd like to go back and talk more about this harp concerto, because it's really extraordinary compared to other concertos in the repertoire.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Very different.
Can you give us a sense of the music itself?
Well, sure. The piece is in four movements, which I think differentiates it just a little bit right there. It starts with a movement called First Light, which I think is a stroke of brilliance, because Jennifer gives the audience and the listener a chance to really lock into the sound of the harp. Starts with the harp all by itself, and it really does feel like you're perched on a mountaintop watching a sunrise. And, you know, from there it kind of evolves and expands into this beautiful sort of lush orchestral texture with a bit of fugal material in there as well, so that it's not predictable. And I think that's the beauty of Jennifer's music. She writes music that the ear can grab onto, but it is also at once original. Mm-hmm. And I think that's you know, that's really a hallmark of her sound, where, you know, there's a strain of familiarity, and yet it keeps your ear and your ideas and your mind engaged. That first movement is a perfect example of that. Second movement is called Joyride, and it is exactly what it sounds like, a wonderful, spirited, buoyant romp, and it's fun to play on the harp. And I think it's pretty fun to listen to also. And the third movement, Lullaby, I was very touched. Jennifer was inspired by my tales of my daughter when we were getting acquainted. I'm quite certain I waxed on about her quite extensively. And that movement is a little bit of an homage to that relationship. And it's a wonderful interplay of really chamber music voices. And I think that was another stroke of brilliance, to have a movement where the harp is almost, you know, it's an egalitarian sort of a texture, where the harp is a very prominent texture of pretty much every section in the orchestra. And then the last movement, Rap Knock, starts with an extended percussion solo, of which the harp is a part, and the harp can be very much a percussion instrument. So I'm knocking on the soundboard in these intricate rhythms with the percussion section, and that's a very, very cool thing to do. It's challenging because it really has to lock. Everything has to be in the pocket, and then moves on to some pretty virtuosic material, fast, you know, running passage work, and it kind of explodes into this kind of surreal, quirky, powerful mixture,
yeah.
and ends in this wonderful sort of, you know, to use the word again, kind of explosion of sound. And that's something I really asked Jennifer for. I did not want this piece to end with a sigh or a whimper, and it certainly doesn't. So I just really feel happy with the way everything, you know, developed with this. And she just took on a big challenge. It's hard to write for the harp.
Yeah.
But it certainly is a different concerto than currently exists. And I think it's really going to stand the test of time.
Well, I think one of Jennifer's strengths is that she sort of turns conventions on their head. And just mm-hmm. thinking of that last movement, to listen to the beginning of the fourth movement, you wouldn't even notice that it's a harp. You think it's just a bunch of percussion instruments knocking out a rhythm.
right.
Yeah. And at the end, you have all these glissandi, but we normally think of the harp glissando as like angels flying in heaven, you know, very
right.
light and lyrical. And these are really powerful, strong, turbulent glissandi mm-hmm. that are going on.
Yeah, they're really more chord clusters.
Yeah.
They're gushing chords, which means you really have to, you know, move some air. You've got to, like, move quickly on the strings to almost play all the notes simultaneously, really. And she uses that in a rhythmic way, which is pretty original as well.
Well, and it's punched up with a güiro, too, which
is really
cool at the end. It's a nice effect.
Right, oh. And it has to be absolutely together. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a lot of interlocking that has to happen in that movement. It's a, you know, it's a wonderful challenge for an instrumentalist, too.
Yeah. I know you had the world premiere performance a little over a year ago. What was Jennifer's involvement leading up to that performance with you both?
Well, she was there during the week of rehearsals, and you know, she was provided a lot of really valuable input. And you know, with any new piece, especially with a weird oddball instrument like the harp, you know, the piece has to evolve idiomatically a little bit, and you know, there has to be a little experimentation with registers and things like that, so that you know, balance is tweaked and everything works together. So having her there was just invaluable, I think, to the evolution of the piece. Just between the first, I think the world premiere was, I think, the first full weekend in May, and or maybe the second. Then a week later, I played it with the Harrisburg Symphony, and between those first two performances, there were, you know, considerable changes to the work that, you know, helped really get it in a place that it needed to be by the time we recorded it in September. So it was good sequence of events.
Yeah, the advantage of having a living composer.
Oh, yeah, that's
There's nothing like being able to turn around in a rehearsal and say, hey, what did you think about that?
Or, yeah.
What, you know, would you like...
Is that what you wanted here?
Right, yeah. I mean, if we could only do that with so many other people.
Oh, I know. Have seances.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Well, I just want to quickly mention Rapture, the piece by Patrick Harlan, another living composer. It's interesting that he's about, or was about the same age back in 2011 when he wrote this piece as Barber was when he wrote his Symphony No. 1. They were both around 25, 26 years old, if my math is mm-hmm. correct.
I believe that's right, yeah.
What can you tell us about this piece for our listeners?
Well, it's a little bit, I was going to say, a little bit like The Barber, in that it takes us on this great journey in a very sort of compact unit. I mean, it's only about 8 minutes long, but it's divided into roughly three sections. It was inspired by a book that Patrick read called Blind Descent, which chronicles the journey of these two rival caving teams, which are competing to be the first team to reach the greatest depth in the earth. So, you know, really kind of harrowing stuff.
Yeah.
And so at the outset of the piece, you get this great sense of anticipation and energy, this sort of buzz in the air, you know, as everyone's getting ready to embark on this great journey. And so that builds and, you know, takes us along our way for a few minutes, and then we stop, and there's a slower section in the middle, which I like to think of as a moment when the caving team sort of arrives at a place where, you know, maybe the tunnel expands into a bigger, more cavernous space, and you get a sense of awe and wonder, and, you know, like the team is looking around, perhaps the first set of human eyes to ever view this place on the earth. And then the journey continues, and as we go deeper and deeper into the earth, gradually this feeling of rapture develops, and Patrick talks about it in the notes that come with the score, that rapture is not a reference to anything having to do with religion at all. Rather, it's a primal sense of fear and an urgency to escape that these cavers describe. You know, think about it. They're in tunnels, claustrophobic spaces, you know, complete darkness in some cases for weeks on end. So you can imagine, you know, how intense that would be. And so the rapture, the piece, is really about extremes of emotion. And at the end, I always like to tell the audience, don't worry, the cavers made it out. We get sunshine and light again. So it's a happy ending, but it's quite a ride in about 8 minutes that he takes us on. And I think it's a phenomenal piece. It's one that I've done a lot as a guest conductor. It's one of my favorite pieces to program, and I'm honored and thrilled that we were able to include it on the album.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Well, it also gives the title for your CD, American Rapture, sort of a point of departure there.
Right.
Yeah, Patrick was happy about that.
Yeah, I bet he was. The recording is from Azika Records, and harpist Yolanda Kantanassis and Ward Stair, conductor of the Rochester Philharmonic. Thanks so much for joining us and sharing this recording with our listeners here on FM 91.
Our pleasure.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Appreciate it.